Space inside.
消防現象、there is the special chapter talking about the mountains and rivers. Title is The Sounds of Valley Streams, The Forms of the Mountains. This is very beautiful chapter. I think you can read this chapter again and again. It's a very beautiful one. First of all, Dogen Zenji brings up the poem composed by Buddhist layman Tumpo in China when he was attained enlightenment. The poem says, "The sounds of the valley streams are his long, broad tongue. The forms of the mountains are his pure body. At night, I heard 84,000 sutra verses uttered. How will I be able to show them to others? The sounds of the valley streams are his long, broad tongue. The forms of the mountains are his pure body. At night I heard the 84,000 sutra verses uttered. How will I be able to show them to others? I think the Buddhist layman Tumpo was greatly impressed by one night when he stayed in the sounds, the river, the color of the mountains, are not usual color or sound. The mountains are mountains, but at that time, mountains are not usual mountains. Mountains and the rivers, exactly nothing but long, broad tongue of Buddha Shakyamuni. So he realized something more than a form or sound of the river through our six senses. He realized something more than through the six senses, what is going on, regardless of whether you understand or not. So that is his poem, The Sound of the Valley. Streams are his long, broad tongue. The forms of the mountains are his pure body. Then every single of mountains, trees, birds. And you were speaking about the truth mentioned by Buddha Shakyamuni, which are exactly same as 84,000 sutra verses, means 84,000 Buddhist scripture, means Buddha's teaching, okay? Which means Buddha's teaching. Buddha's teaching is not talking about the particular spiritual divinity or not particular spiritual fascinations. But talking about, talking about the truth. Truth means thusness, as it isness. The total picture of existence as it isness. Before you poke your head into it. And also he talks about how can you live? How can you live as a human being, becoming one with trees, mountains, and rivers in peace and harmony? Because trees and mountains and rivers are nothing different, not different from our life. So he doesn't talk about not particular subjects, so called spirituality or materialism or anything, nothing particular. So that teaching becomes 84,000 Buddhist scriptures. So briefly speaking, he is talking about life of human beings, life of trees, life of air, life of universe, life of unfamiliar planets, what we have never seen before. So this person, anyway, they realize something more than human experience through six senses. And that's why he said, how will I be able to show them to others someday? How? And Dogen Denji mentions about this comment to this poem. Dogen's commentary to this poem is the main issue, subject of this chapter. Very interesting. So you should repeatedly anyway read, even though you don't understand it, you can feel something. Then first of all, if you read this chapter, immediately you can think, it's impossible for us to understand in that way. That's why Dogen Denji mentions here, people of that time said, this sort of things is not possible for ordinary people like us to do. He must be very unusual. This is very common. If you read this chapter immediately, you can think in that way. But even though you think so, but on the other hand, it's pretty good for you because you can notice this kind of the world which you have never seen or heard before. That's pretty good for you. And also Dogen Denji continually to say, how regrettable it is that there are sounds and forms in the streams and mountains that we cannot understand. Yet it is a matter for delight that we have the opportunity to acquire the proper conditions for experiencing the way in these sounds and forms. So, through the six senses, you believe it's impossible for us from this point, how regrettable it is that there are sounds and forms in the streams and mountains that we cannot understand. But on the other hand, your life are completely embraced by the sound of the forms of the mountains and rivers, regardless of whether you are conscious of it or not. From this point, it is a matter for delight that we have the opportunity to acquire the proper conditions for experiencing the way in these sounds and form. This being so, does this mean that when they are revealed, the body is near, and that when they are obscured, the body is near? In one aspect, we don't believe this situation, but on the other hand, regardless of whether you realize or not, our life is completely embraced by this situation. So what it is? By what situation is your life embraced? But this is called truth beyond your experience or not experience, beyond you understand, your understanding or beyond not your understanding. This is a situation by which your life is completely embraced. In other words, the truth is one. We say truth is one. If you practice that and someday first experience, if you really concentrate on practicing for 6 months or so, with really concentration, with really intention, okay? Intentional feeling and attitude, then you can experience first. That is really something you can see more than before. That is a kind of a universal view. You really see something broad. So everything turns into the something else than before you have experienced. That is called enlightenment, or that is called the truth. You can truth touches your heart. That time you say that truth is one. All sentient beings are one. But still you can see the one in terms of your senses. But if you don't experience the situation, what you don't experience as a universe can be seen from your understanding, your senses. That's why whatever you do, that is the one point, first point, is you always put a certain label on situation, your situation, whatever it is. You experience, or you don't experience, or neutral, whatever. Immediately you put a certain label on a situation. You are facing, or you are swimming, or you are not swimming, or you are completely something else. Whatever you are, in whatever situation you are, anyway, we immediately see that situation in terms of your six senses. That is called ego, because we don't realize that situation. That situation is, that functioning of the consciousness is called ego. So we never know. We never know real truth. What is called one? What do you mean one? Okay. You say one, I experience the truth, the I experience of the truth as a one. What do you mean? If you say so, immediately truth as one can be seen from your six senses. So it's not one, it's two already. Because you see the truth in front of you. But one is one from the beginning to end, anyway. That is real truth, you know. But in common sense, in our usual sense, we always say, I experience the truth of the one. Immediately, the experiencing the truth as a one is no longer one. Because two. Because you can see it in terms of your six senses. So immediately the truth you have experienced as a one is kind of an object you can see. But we don't understand that situation, because functioning of consciousness works very quickly, very quickly. And also we get use of that way of life. it's pretty difficult to see the truth as one, exactly. So we always, you can face always the ego sense, whatever, in whatever situation you may be. Even though religion, even though in the domain of good experience of spirituality, there is a still ego. Or in the domain of bad experience of human life, there is the ego there. So whatever you do, there is always ego. That's why problem coming up in every circumstances, all circumstances, religious life, sciences, or good in the good person's life, well, everywhere. So, well, that's why this is the one point we always put a certain level on your object and your experience, saying understanding or not understanding, or you don't care. Whatever you say, always you put a certain label on. And also, problem is, there are many kinds of labels which differs in everyone. So, if I see the real truth through my practice, then I understand the truth. Then I try to explain. All of you experience the truth and you try to explain. But everyone talks about truth in a different way. So you put the label on the truth which you have experienced, and then you start to talk about it. You try to teach, and then completely different word come up. That means you see the truth even though it is a real truth. If you see the truth, immediately that truth is seen in terms of your viewpoint. That's why around the truth, we always create a trouble. Look at the human world. This is one point, okay? So we always put the label on the everything. That means, and also you don't see it, you don't realize that one. This is called ego, okay? And second point is, there are many kinds of labels, okay? In other words, ego appears in many ways. Third point, the truth as it is, your judgment, your experience or your evaluation about you, of you, of object, of any situation, are lost upon the pine tree as it is, birds as it is, nature as it is, cat as it is. Whatever kind of a judgment, evaluation you try to put on, nature is nature. Bird is bird. They don't care. World is world. Truth is truth. The Karagiri is Karagiri. Whatever you say so, whatever criticism you give me, Karagiri is Karagiri. Even though I try to cry or I don't try to cry, under subject circumstances. All I have to do is to live as correctly as I am. In the domain of criticism, so-called criticism, under which I express myself as not crying, as a disappointment or as a not disappointment, whatever it is. But finally, what is the real truth in Karagi, for Karagi? Karagi has to live, not has to. Karagi must be Karagi as it is. This is the final goal. So it's very simple, but it is very difficult to see that way of life. Okay. Because always we put a certain label on a certain situation, so immediately you can create the judgment, evaluation, and put the label on, and then you can see the many labels, many kinds of labels, and then you are stumbled over. But on the other hand, no matter how long you are crying or you are not crying, you are making complaint, whatever, the world is world. Pine tree is pine tree. So, one of the Bhāshya's disciples said, my teacher says, you should learn the pine tree from the pine tree. You should learn bamboo from the bamboo. It means egolessness. Yes, it is. Egolessness means, anyway, you have to release your hold of your judgment. Your way means constantly seeing, putting the label on. So you have to release your hold of this pattern, this lifestyle. It's pretty hard, And then at that time, you can really see real truth. But if you see the reality, you can see all these contradictions. I told you before, you can see all this functioning of your consciousness. Means you always put the label on. On the other hand, the nature is the nature as it is. So this is very contradictory. So Zen Buddhism or Buddhas and patriarchs constantly teaches us you have to see the nature as it is beyond your judgment. It's pretty hard because we are already putting a label on. So we don't know how. That's why all we have to do is not try to destroy the functioning of the consciousness. In other words, you have to put the function of the consciousness be alone. At that time, consciousness exists as it is. But if you put a certain level on the functioning of consciousness, the consciousness immediately something different. So that's why Zazen is pretty important for us. You sit down, and then you can see many thoughts, many ideas constantly. But you have to release your hold of any thoughts, any ideas constantly. That is all you can do it. It's not a matter of discussion. You have to practice that way.
Nevertheless, you don't understand why we have to do this, because you don't experience pretty deeply. But there is no other way. So all you have to do is you have to walk step by step, day by day, like this. This is the shikantara, so-called shikantara. But in the common sense, it's ridiculous. It seems to be ridiculous. That's why we try to give lots of technique to guide you in order to get the fascination, you know, special experience. Well, we can do. It's pretty easy. But it is pretty dangerous, in a sense. So that's why the Dogen Zen says, if we examine the matter closely, was it the Upasaka who became enlightened, or was it the mountains and streams which became enlightened? If anyone has eyes to see, then certainly anyone is able to see the long, broad tongue and the pure body. He asked finally, okay? You try to examine, if you examine this situation, so-called the oneness of the truth, please examine very closely. At that time, the oneness experience of the oneness is that you have experienced oneness of nature with the nature, or nature experience oneness, which is what? Oneness means no. Nature is one. Nature is exactly the same as our lives, so strictly speaking. That's why if your mind becomes very calm and immediately you can touch that core, that situation, then you say that's oneness. What is oneness? The moment when you experience oneness, you say, I understand the oneness. That means already you put a certain label on oneness. Means you're always looking at the nature as a one in terms of your view. But you never see yourself in terms of the nature itself. Because if you experience oneness, there is no particular subject or object you can see or you are seen by. That is a oneness. So that's where finally, who experienced enlightenment? I experienced? No. Trees are enlightenment? Enlightened? No. So that's why finally it said, Dogen Zen says, was it Upasaka who became enlightened, or was it mountains and streams which became enlightened? So there is no particular subject. But we always take hold very strongly of subject. Consciously or unconsciously, this is a human being. Nevertheless, we don't realize it. That's why this is called ego. If you don't realize this functioning of ego, very subtly, very minutely, that is so-called human trouble. So that's why practice of egolessness is very important. How can we practice egolessness? Zazen is very simple. So, if you sit zazen, immediately your six senses, anyway, start to work. At that time, don't put the label on. All you can do is just sit down as you are. That is completely, you can release your hold of the functioning of the consciousness, the human bodies, your circumstances, completely. At that time, it is called oneness. That's why if you do that, then you feel good. Beyond your senses, your understanding. Then if you feel good, immediately we put a certain label on it, I feel good. That's why Zazen is good. But this is already ego. So whatever you feel good, you don't feel bad. You don't feel bad, you don't feel good. Whatever. Anyway, you sit down and you have to release your hold of all situations. At that time, real truth starts to bloom. Immediately over there. Regardless of whether you understand or not. This is a unique way to live in peace and harmony. But we are very stubborn. Very stubborn. Still we don't believe. So, constantly we have to talk about. We have to encourage each other to live in that way. Look at your life. Well, finally, what you have to do is that, is there any particular way to live? No. So, that's why Dogen Zen says, if anyone has eyes to see, then certainly anyone is able to see the long, broad tongue and the pure bodies. It is. This experience is not the particular, they open not to particular persons, so-called term poor, but to everyone. You can do it. That's why we do. From century after centuries, Zazen has been handed down from generation to generation. Okay, do you have questions? Let's discuss. Let's have an open discussion. Okay.
You're saying that your judgment of the pine tree is completely lost upon the pine tree. And so then I wonder about the judgment of yourself. Is the judgment of yourself completely lost upon yourself as well? Or how should we handle like self-criticism, self-judgment?
Would you say once more again, if you judge, would you say once more again?
Well, you said that your judgment of the pine tree is completely lost upon the pine tree. Your judgment of the truth is completely lost upon the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wonder how we should handle self-judgment and self-criticism.
Well, the same applies to the self. Self is exactly the same as the pine tree. You know, no matter how long you try to put a certain label on your life, okay? So-called self-criticism. But a real truth, the true self, well, any kind of criticism is lost upon the real truth, the true self. Because finally, right in the domain of the criticism, all you have to do is take one step. You have to continue to walk. Where? In your life. That's it. That in your life is including whole work. But if you work in the small domain of the self-criticism, it's pretty hard. But finally, what you have to do is you have to continue to work in the domain of the big self, including you and others and the universe. That's all. This is final things you have to do. Final terminal stations you can go after crying and criticism and the judgment and, you know, many things, and then finally you can come to terminal stations. And then what you have to do in a terminal station? Well, let's move. That's all. That is a point you can realize. So from this point, all you have to do is right in the middle of the self-criticism and self-judgment, let's release your hold of self-criticism anyway. But you cannot destroy self-criticism because you have done already. So all you can do is, in the domain of the self-criticism, you have to practice to, what would you say, to release, to lose your hold on your criticism. That's it. And then immediately, the big self start to bloom. So day by day, that's why Dogen then says, let's walk in the mist, and then your dress gets wet before your consciousness. That practice seems to be not radical, you know, and it seems to be very slow. We don't believe it. But this is very important. That's it, all we can do. Well, what do you mean a mist? We don't understand what the mist is. Because your life is complete mist. Self, real self is what? It's mist. You can say mysticism. But you can put any kind of level on mist, you know, mysticism or non-mysticism. It doesn't matter. Mist is mist. And then you are you. All you have to do is you walk in the mist. That's it. And then very naturally there is a total communication between mist and you. Okay? But this is what? How can I get my dress wet? All I have to do is, let's walk. There. That seems to be very slow, we believe, but it's very quick. Very self-criticism, okay? So you have to deal with the self-criticism. From where it comes, how can I deal with, as best as you can, you try to deal with the self-criticism. In other words, making an arrangement of everyday life from which any kind of criticism comes. Do you understand? You have to deal with. I criticize myself, my talk, right now, okay? And then, I cannot ignore that criticism. So I have to look at my criticism. From where it comes, from what situation it comes. So if I see something wrong, I have to adjust. Anyway. Do you understand? But basically, but usually people don't do this. You deal with, but if you cannot deal with self-criticism because it is complicated, okay? And then you cry or judge, you know, you are disappointed. But that is a pretty difficult, that is a difficult, you know, way of life. That's why basically what you have to do is whatever happens, you understand your criticism or not, you have to walk step by step in the domain of a criticism. That's all you have to do. That is big self.
become open.
Okay. It is pretty simple and it's not usual, pretty usual way. That's why you need a guidance anyway. Your good friends and the teachers and the teachings, the Buddha's examples, ancestors' examples, we have to learn. Okay.
It strikes me that what you're talking about is that in our lives we build up structures, ego and social institutions, and we become slaves to those structures. And what we try to do in Zazen is to become free, such that we have the raw reality of life and no preconceptions and such. But it seems to me that those structures are built up in order to accomplish things, in order to have organization and categorical thinking to do things that need to be done. It's like the military, etc. And it seems like whenever we then go to doing things, we go back to structured thinking. And I'm wondering about how we be free from structure and yet at the same time do the things that need to be done.
Yeah, but I think point is not that you, whether you can destroy or not, okay, or you can completely ignore that social organization, the social group or organization or thinking world, etc. Because we always try to structure something, you know, create something always through the six functioning of the six senses. So it is not a matter of destroy that function of the consciousness or organization or the conscious world itself. Important point is how can you use of functioning of the human consciousness for not only you, for all sentient beings. So means what do you mean? What do you mean by free from? Okay, we have to think about it. What do you mean by free from human consciousness or human problem, etc.? Okay, social organizations, etc. Oh, this is very important, you know.
It seems like that is something that one finds out. If I started out with the preconceived notion of what freedom is, then that would be another structure.
Yes, another structure. But that another structure you cannot ignore because we already have constantly another structures, next. Just like a physics. You can find another idea, you can find the one idea of the truth. And then, if you find it next, you have to another idea of the truth constantly. But an important point is, how can you use the physics? You want to use the physics just for interactive to build up a fantastic physical world, ignoring human emotions, ignoring real reality beyond physics or sciences. Reality of the world is going anywhere beyond the physics anyway. On the other hand, we can see the human world through the physics or through the sciences, yes. So important point is how can you use physics just for physics or just for all sentient beings? It's difference, quite difference.
When you say for all sentient beings, you mean to improve life?
Right. Improve physics knowledge of physics and also the reality of culture, reality of a human being who are alive day to day, okay? Beyond physics. For instance, if you drink water, you can quench the thirst, okay? What kind of water we should drink? Yes, scientifically it's very clear. So you shouldn't drink dirty water. But dirty water is not always dirty, it's not always injure your life, you know, damage your life. Because under certain circumstances, even though you drink dirty water, you can quench your thirst under certain particular circumstances. I heard these stories from my brother. So what is a dirty? Concept of the dirtiness or what? So that means a reality of life, okay? Your life which is living constantly. So that living, real reality of the living is beyond, you know, the idea of the water can be seen from, we can see from physics or sciences, etc. Beyond. Well, emotionally, we don't want to drink dirty water. But under certain circumstances, you have to realize there is a fact that people can quench the thirst, even though they drink dirty water.
Well, being able to see that, isn't that freedom?
Huh?
Being able to see things in that way.
Yes, that is a freedom. That's why you have to deal with the physics for all sentient beings. For all sentient beings, including physics, science, emotion, and something more than physics, emotion, to consciousness, anyway. Because all human beings are alive beyond dirty water or clear water. That water is really connected with human beings, human life. So physics, according to the sciences, we ignore that's reality, real reality. You can quench the thirst, you know, by dirty water. We ignore. But it's fact. So what is a human life? Human life can be understood by certain physics or science. No. Something more than. It's big. That is called, I say, for all sentient beings. So physics should develop anyway for sake of the physics, or for sake of all sentient beings. That's quite different. But physics itself doesn't have any problem. Wherever you may go, physics exists. You know? Because physics is a part of the universe. More questions?
Well, it seems like, yes, ultimately what we want to do is to have lives that are fulfilling. It seems that, yes, ultimately what we want is to have lives that are fulfilling and satisfactory, and for that, we do want to live in a higher consciousness where there's beauty and love and knowledge and justice. Living a life like that. But it seems like it takes freedom in order to get away from the structures that limit us in not living there, such that we live at a very ego level.
Because we have already preconception of the satisfaction. If you want to satisfy your life, you know, better life, if you use the word better life, satisfaction, immediately you have a preconception, you know. And then you try to get the situation in order to satisfy your consciousness and through the preconceptions. But reality is very complicated, more than your idea of satisfaction or not satisfaction, completely. Freedom, for instance, if you say, I want to be free, so immediately we have already preconception of the freedom. And if you have a preconception of freedom, immediately you are carried away by this idea of freedom. And then if you cannot get that kind of freedom from the reality, you don't want, you fight, or you kill, or you escape. Always we do.
You said the objective is to help all sentient beings. Does that have a specific meaning for you?
Yes, that's why we have to understand once more again, what do you mean, idea of freedom or satisfaction, or freedom of the world, or what do you mean, idea of peace? We have to think once more again. Do you understand? For instance, if you see the peace, I want to have a peace. Immediately, we have a preconception of a peace, you know. That preconception of the peace coming from your education, what you have accumulated, and also from the day-to-day situations, you know. And then, immediately, you want to have this idea of peace from this reality. But reality is pretty vast, you know. So very naturally, sometimes you can get, but even though peace you have get, disappears immediately. Sometimes you can keep it for a while, but it doesn't satisfy you. Still questionable, you know. And then that's why we always try to get idea of the, you try to get the word in terms of the idea of peace we have had. And then we try to change. See, criticizing the world, criticizing us, you know. So that is a very touristic word coming up. That's why no matter how long we do, well, it's a problem. Do you understand what?
We have a social organization here at the Zen Center to accomplish something. The fact that we have that organization can become very limiting in our lives.
Sure. That's why social organization, so-called Zen Center, is not the perfect. I don't think this is a peaceful world we can depend on finally. No. It is through Sangha we have built up. So it's very impermanent. But all we have to do is right in the domain of social organization, we have to figure out what's the best way to live in peace and harmony with all sentient beings, not with this organization, not with myself, not with my friend, etc. With all sentient beings, how can we live? This is our practice. Because if you don't see this way, organization becomes a monster. Do you understand? It's very natural. That's why I said, even in a religion, we can create devil. Under the beautiful flag of a God and the Buddhas, and we can create the devils. You know? If you don't have this way of life, you know, this way of life means you have to figure out constantly what is the best way to live with all sentient beings in peace and harmony, constantly. Instead of being carried away by social organization. But social organization is a reality we cannot ignore. So we have to live there, but we cannot be tossed away by it. More or less, we belong to a certain organization. Do you understand? Not only, you know, religious organization, you know, political organization, and scientific organization, and the social organization, many kinds of organizations. Sometimes you are chatting organization. Do you understand chatting? Chatting means nothing. You don't want to do anything. Just chatting every day. And then the people come to you and create a group. Do you understand? Sure. Look at the human. Whatever you do, people will agree with what you your lifestyle. This is America. In Japan, a little bit difficult. But in the United States, whatever you do, people come up to you and help. I don't know if it's good or bad, right or wrong. In other words, I am not criticizing that situation. In other words, broadly speaking, human beings has to belong to a certain organization, group, so-called group. Okay? Without group, you cannot live. This is really true. So if you don't care human life with without any philosophy, any religion, fine. But immediately you can belong to that kind of a group. So-called no philosophy, no religions. And people enjoy very much. Do you understand? And then within this organization, people can communicate pretty well with particular those people, but they cannot communicate with other people who belong to another group. Do you understand this is a fighting? Do you? That's the human word. Christianity, Buddhism, you know, under the beautiful flag of God, you know, God is one, but we are fighting each other. So idealistically, physically, mentally, we belong to the group. Okay? That's why we have to be careful. But on the other hand, we can walk in a pure sense of the word, but we cannot ignore that group. So we have to belong to the group. So how can you live there? This is our practice. That's where we can create a wonderful culture, human society, etc. But if you don't ignore, you know, if you ignore that way of life, immediately there is another kind of the world come up. That is a war, fighting, you know, violent. Okay, any other?
You mentioned about the ox and the cart, and usually people want to move the cart to hit the ox, but in Buddhism, they pay more attention to the cart. Can you talk a little more about that?
It's a long story again. Yeah, I mean, simply speaking, okay, I mentioned the self-physics and to the Gary, okay? Means, if we try to figure out how to live in human life, okay, immediate problem coming up, and then at that time, we try to hit the ox. That means a very common, you know, usual sense. In among the human world, okay? That means intellectually and customarily, we know this way. So let's hear it. But we don't see the cart. We don't see cart is completely separate, you know, from the horse. So we always hit the horse constantly. So that means we obviously hit the physics constantly. If the physics doesn't grow, you know, we try to hit the physics constantly. But we don't pay attention to the human world. Who lives beyond the physics? Do you understand? That is called card. Because even though it hits the card, it doesn't say anything. Do you understand? Even though you drink a dirty water, you know, human being can quench thirst. That means complete beyond intellectual understanding. But if you try to hit that human being, you know, with the physical, with the intellectual sense, it doesn't work. Just like a cart. You're hitting the cart. But we always try to hit the horse. That is the intellectual world. But the intellectual world is important, but it should be connected with something else. Okay? Something else is human world beyond physics and the religions and etc. Anyway, that is. That's why Dogen Zenji mentions, let's pay attention to hitting the cart. Hitting the cart means not ignore horse. Okay? We look at the bus because cart is connected with the horse. Horse connected with the cart immediately. That's why we have to, hitting the cart means you have to see the boss.